Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Real interesting topic this morning, a topic that we don't talk about enough, but that did happen. It's history. Jim Hall is here. And he is the author of a couple of books on lynchings, and we're going to get into that this morning as we go along. Jim, it's good to see you again.
Thank
good morning.
You, Ted. Good to be here.
You and me go way back. You are covering things with the Freelance Star, and I was on the radio side, and how things have changed.
Many a boring hour in city council.
Boy, did we ever. Did we ever. You, since retiring, you have really fallen into a topic that I don't know that I've ever seen anybody talk about, and you have written two really interesting books about this.
Well, thank you. I don't know how I fell into it either. I sometimes kid myself and say that I was a witness to a lynching in another life, and that somehow or other I've taken an interest in this topic, but I have. I don't know where that interest grew from, but it's fascinating. It's I'm happy to contribute what I hope is a little bit of addition to Virginia history.
And the fact it is Virginia history, and it catches your attention when you look at just the dates of a lot of this. So we're talking the 1930s.
The first book I wrote was about the death of Shedrick Thompson in Fauquier County in 1932. The second book I wrote was about the 1880 death of Arthur Jordan, also in Fauquier County.
Boy, Fauquier County seems to be that seems to be an area where was it more prevalent there?
No, those two cases caught my attention.
Okay.
They were both unique, but they had three black. I'm trying to count them in my head. They are what I would call in the Hall of Shame. They're among Virginia localities that had a number of lynchings, multiple lynchings over a period of time. They did not have the most, but they're right up there near the top.
Okay. Just to see it and to see that it's a locality near here.
About 40 miles.
Catches your attention.
Yes,
that this did happen. Like you said, the first book, the last lynching in Northern Virginia, Seeking Truth at Rattlesnake Mountain. I found that to be just fascinating. And when you came in, we talked about it, and you said there might be other books in the offing. And about a year ago, Condemned for Love in Old Virginia, the lynching of Arthur Jordan.
That's right. History Press published both. That one came out in July of last year. It is the story of a sort of a love story that ended tragically.
And we're going to get into that. We'll tell that story when we come back and as we go along this morning. Have you found? Do people want to talk about this?
At first, they did not. I encountered several folks who said, Why are you bringing up this old story? Let it lie. And my answer was that I'm not retelling the old story. I'm telling the old story, that it has never been told before. I'm continually amazed, including about 2 weeks ago in Orange County, where I'm working on another story. I met with the president of the African American Historical Society of Orange County, and she did not know of a 1936 incident in Orange that I'm working on. It is a little known aspect of Virginia's history. I think we choose to ignore it.
Yeah, you would hear and you would hear stories from Mississippi and other places in the Deep South. And you really have brought this to light in Virginia. And you do want to ask questions. You wonder about local law enforcement. You wonder about the General Assembly.
We've had about 115 cases in Virginia, 115 victims, black victims and white victims, but predominantly black victims. Professor Gianluca DeFazio at James Madison University, I recommend his website, Lynching in Virginia. He's done a masterful job of recording what has happened here.
I'll have to look at that. That to see something like that would be...
Yes. He's he's really amazing. His site is a pride of Virginia. And when the Virginia General Assembly in 2019 apologized for lynching, they instructed the state administration to come up with a list of all victims. And the administration took the easy way out, and they adopted DeFazio's list as the state list. Hmm. It's that authoritative.
I wondered, you just touched on this. I wondered if you did run into people that just would say, why would you bring this up?
Yes, especially in the first one with Shedrick Thompson in 32, and I might encounter it again in this 36 case I'm looking at in Orange County, because it's not that long ago. It's about 80 to 90 years ago.
Yeah.
And so you have family members who certainly weren't involved at the time, but may have heard the stories, mm-hmm. may have known who was involved.
Boy, it's interesting. The fact that you've got two books and maybe working on a third in just this region does make you wonder yes. how many you're going to run into and how close you start moving to this area.
We if you use DeFazio's database, we had no lynchings in Fredericksburg, in Spotsylvania, in Stafford, or in Caroline. Okay. Or King George. Well, you have to go out to the Northern Neck to find them, or you have to go north to find them.
Interesting. Jim Hall here this morning. We're going to talk about his book, Condemned for Love in Old Virginia. When we come back, we'll get into the story that he tells. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Jim Holland this morning. He's a local author. The author of his latest book is Condemned for Love. In Old Virginia, the lynching of Arthur Jordan. So let's talk about this particular story, Jim, because you said the 1880s.
This is the 1880 in Fauquier County, and I think of it, Ted, as a story of racial intolerance and violence in post-Reconstruction Virginia. In addition, it's a story of love pursued at a time of hate. It's a story of secrets kept and disastrous disclosure. And it's a conflict between the genders and the generations. And most of all, it's a story of a lynching. The setting is Fauquier County, Virginia, northern Fauquier, in the foothills beneath the Blue Ridge Mountains, in the village of Hume, H-U-M-E, for those who know that area, 1880. And the setting is wheat fields, the farm owned by the Nathan Corder family. The main characters in the story are two. Elvira Corder is 25 years old. She's single. She's the oldest child of Nathan and Betty Corder, and she's described as very attractive, very competent. She did go to school through at least to become literate, but her upbringing and her life was very limited. She had never left the farm, as far as I could tell, never lived anywhere but on the farm, and had never held any a job except farm work. And then the other main person in the story is Arthur Jordan. He's also 25, also a native of Fauquier. His family was a slave family. He was born into slavery. He was he's described as 5'10", about 160 pounds. And he had been on his own for much of his life. He had a very, very different upbringing than Elvira did. And I wonder sometimes if she might have admired his independence. He was said to be copper-colored and well-built. And he was married and had a daughter. So their love affair was upsetting to many people for a number of reasons. But one of them was that he was a married man. He was an illiterate. He had never learned to read or write. And he worked on the Corder farm for about 3 years. He was also, as you read the accounts of what happened, one thing that comes up constantly in surprise to me was he was described, he apparently was a young man who was very confident and carried himself well, carried himself in great pride. And his white detractors, of course, saw that as arrogance. And that seemed to be held against him almost as much as his relationship with Elvira. Hmm. Remember, he was born about 1855, so he lived only 5 years to 10 years in slavery. He was raised. He was an independent man, and he did not adhere to the niceties, so to speak, of slavery, the courtesies of slavery. He was much more a different kind of black man that took the stage after the end of the Civil War. Unfortunately for both of them, in my opinion, they began a romance. It was not a traditional romance. This wasn't Sunday afternoon dinners with the family or long walks in the park or down the lane in the summer, in a nice summer evening. This was a secret romance. It was voluntary. And as other historians have pointed out with black-white romances, it could have gone on a long time. She had no incentive to say anything about it, that's for sure. And he, nor did he. He knew that if the disclosure of their romance became public, it was likely a death sentence for him. But pregnancy changed everything. It revealed the relationship. And so when Elvira became pregnant, I imagined a conversation between her and Arthur where she says to him, "Arthur, I'm pregnant. What are we going to do?"
Yeah.
And the decision-making on at that point was very interesting to me. His decision, he had some options. He had a wife and child, an infant child, but he could have taken them and fled somewhere. He could have fled by himself somewhere. But what they decided was that they would flee together. I think it's an indication of what their romance was. And they fled from by train from Fauquier, northern Fauquier. And the family recognized later what they had not seen at the time was that this was a dating couple, so to speak. He would she was later and later getting back into the house after milking the cows, and they noticed that he was also carrying her milk buckets,
uh-huh.
And they wondered at the time, why is he doing that? And then of course the flight told them why. They established a elaborate plan of escape. They would leave from separate stations. They would sit, of course, by law, in separate cars on the train. She, like Jessica in The Merchant of Venice, stole money from her father as they left. And they took the train first to Alexandria and then to D.C. And Nathan, of course, I picture the household that morning when he gets up and realizes that his daughter's gone. He immediately understood what was happening, I guess, and went to the train station in Marshall. And he felt like he was right behind them, and he convinced the conductor to allow him to inspect the train. And apparently, though, he was late. He was later than he thought he was. They had left earlier, and they were not on that train. They went to D.C., and then I did a lot of work with help from experts in Maryland to determine if someone could go from D.C. to Hagerstown, Maryland by train, and absolutely they could. There was good rail service at that time. And that's what happened. They took the train from Washington or Baltimore, I'm not sure which, and they went to Hagerstown, Maryland, and they ended up at the farm of Abraham Shupp, S-H-U-P-P, in Clear Springs, Maryland, just outside of Washington, Williamsport, Maryland, in Washington County. And they were happy there. They were both working for the Shupps on their farm, and they enjoyed evenings and weekends, Sundays together, when they would drive by carriage into Williamsport. At one point, they even attended the ceremonial grand opening of a new black church in Williamsport. But those evenings or weekends in Williamsport led to their downfall. I don't think they realized that Maryland was just as strict about interracial romance as Virginia was. Huh. And there was someone who spotted them, a white woman, pregnant white woman, and a black man, and enjoying an evening out, and that offended him. And so he wrote, we don't know who this man was, but he wrote two letters, one to the postmaster in Markham, where the quarters lived, and one to a man that he had heard once employed Arthur. Both letters, or at least one of the letters, made their way to Nathan, Elvira's father.
Huh.
And he gathered together some friends, four of them, and with his two adult sons, they rode the 80 miles north, crossed the Potomac River. They left from Fauquier and crossed the Potomac and went to crossed on the ferry and went to Williamsport, Maryland. They stayed with the letter writer, and the next morning they went to the Shep farm and they got the drop on Arthur. He was in the barn cleaning the stables. And they shackled him and placed him on a horse. Well, Elvira saw or heard what was going on, understood completely what was going on, and came running out to try to stop them. And the one of the newspaper accounts, I think, was so interesting in that it said that she was so upset and she was so very indignant and refused to be comforted by her father, her brothers, anybody who was in the party. And that to me, tells me yet again that this was a voluntary romance, that she was doing exactly, as a 25-year-old adult, she was doing exactly as she wished to
do.
The posse, so to speak, I hate calling them a posse because they were not sanctioned by any sheriff. They were a mob on a kidnapping run, which is exactly what they did. So they, I think because Elvira was so upset, they decided not to bring them home together. One of them took Elvira to the Taylor Hotel in Washington, Williamsport, Maryland. And the rest of the group rode for home, recrossed the Potomac. And they happened to stop in Winchester for supplies. I think they had traveled about 20 or 30 miles between Williamsport and Winchester. And that was a bad mistake because Arthur used that moment to try to escape. He started screaming and saying, "Help me, help me, I'm being kidnapped." And he drew a crowd in downtown Winchester, including two policemen. And the rioters attempted to flee to realize that we made a terrible mistake, let's get the heck out of here. And the policemen wouldn't let them. So the policemen took the whole group of them to a local judge, and everybody told their stories to the local judge, and the local judge sided with the rioters, with Mr. Corder, and deputized one of them and told him to take Arthur directly to the jail in Warrenton, which is what they did. The black people in black residents of Winchester tried to find an attorney to argue for Arthur's release. They did find an attorney, but by the time they got back to the judge's office, they were gone. So the writers placed him in the jail in Warrenton, and four nights later, a mob of about 40 people rode south from northern Fauquier to Warrenton, the county seat, and they developed a trick that was used many times in later years. Remember, this was an 1880 incident, and most historians date lynching from about 1880 to about 1930. So we're at the beginning of the lynching period. DeFazio has pushed that number 1880 back into the 1870s or 60s, but we're at the beginning of the lynching period. And so they ride from Fauquier. They blacken the face of one of their own. They tie his hands in front of them. Most of the mob members hide around the corner at the jail, but the others go up to the door and bang on the door. And Sheriff Patty, who's upstairs, jailer Patty, who was upstairs, lives upstairs, said, "What do you want?" He said, "A prisoner from Rectortown." And he said, "I'll be down in a minute." And so he comes down, opens the door, and then he's kind of bum-rushed. A bunch of people come into the jail, including this fake prisoner. And he realizes, well, this is way too many people to bring me a prisoner. And he realizes instantly what's going on, and that is they're there to get Jordan. And so they steal the keys from him. They play at gunpoint. He's held at gunpoint. They find Jordan in the cell. They unlock it and bring him out. They place a rope around his arm, and dragging the five blocks down to the Warrenton Cemetery. Jordan is again trying to escape, and one of the riders, one of the mob members, strikes him right above the eye with a rifle butt and knocks him down into unconscious into the road. And the coroner afterwards, and when he did the autopsy on Jordan's body, said that Jordan died from being dragged to the cemetery, not from being hung from a tree.
Yeah.
He was dead when they got him to the cemetery. That's where they hanged him. They hanged him in the Warrenton Cemetery. No one was ever charged. They rode away. And they... He was buried in an unmarked grave in the black section of the Warrenton Cemetery. And I thought it was an interesting footnote. The Virginia General Assembly was in session at the time, and one of the delegates, a man from Norfolk, rose to make a motion that the governor send a delegation to Warrenton to try to figure out what happened and to post a reward and to arrest those responsible for Jordan's death. And the delegate from Fauquier rose to oppose it and said, "If when something like this happens, I close my eyes and turn my back and let the proceedings go." And it was amazing to me that in 1880, on the floor of the Virginia General Assembly, the House of Delegates, there was just a frank expression of support for such racial hostility.
Yeah.
The assembly voted to table the request. In effect, they killed it.
We're going to take a break right here because there's more to this story.
Yes.
Much more. And this is just fascinating stuff. Jim Hall, a retired Freelance Star reporter, but you've turned into an investigative reporter and a historian through all of this. Condemned for Love in Old Virginia, The Lynching of Arthur Jordan is the book. History Press, and you can get on Amazon too, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Amazon and Barnes & Noble, yes. And those kinds of places. You can find this book.
Available locally at the Barnes & Noble here.
Condemned for Love in Old Virginia, The Lynching of Arthur Jordan. We'll continue the story when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff this morning. Makes you think. Jim Hall is in. He is the author of Condemned for Love in Old Virginia, The Lynching of Arthur Jordan. Also, the author of the book, The Last Lynching in Northern Virginia, Seeking Truth at Rattlesnake Mountain. And Arthur Jordan has been lynched. What happens to Elvira?
That's the favorite question. It's almost, when I talk to groups, it is without exception almost the first question that's asked. And if I was in Leesburg at the Bausch Library and gave a talk a couple Sundays ago. My brother lives in Leesburg, so he was at the he was there. And as we were finished and walking out of the room, the first thing he said to me, "Well, you didn't talk about Elvira. What happened to Elvira?" And I thought, oh no. Usually if I forget to bring it up, somebody will ask the question.
Yeah.
But nobody did. And I'm more careful in the couple talks I've given since then. I've got prepared notes and I don't rely on my memory.
So when we last had her, they up in Western Maryland had gotten a hold of her,
yes.
But she didn't travel back with, was she with that group that
no.
was going back to
no.
Winchester?
They assigned, there was a group of seven men who left Fauquier to go kidnap them. And they assigned what was described in one news account as the youngest man. And I'm convinced to this day that that was her brother, Will, her younger brother, Will, to try to convince her, first to try to convince her that everything was going to be okay and to come back with them quietly. And she absolutely refused to do that. She was happy. She was pregnant. She was with the father of her child and the man she loved, and she resented, these are my words now, but I think it's a fair assumption or fair reading of the facts. She resented the heck out of her father and brothers and neighbors coming up there to dictate what her life was going to be like.
Sure.
So they, six of the seven, left with Arthur shackled, headed for home, and one stayed with her and took her back to Williamsport. It's about 6 miles from the Shep farm to Williamsport, Maryland, in western Maryland. It's not too far from the Pennsylvania border, right on the Potomac River. And they placed her in the Taylor Hotel, which was the town's most important hotel, and placed her in care of Mr. Taylor, the innkeeper. And they told any reporter who asked about it that they were going to return for her later, that they wanted to take the trains because of her, quote, delicate condition, she being pregnant at the time, didn't want her to endure another long ride on horseback. So that's where we are left. It was frustrating to me in the years of working on this story that reporters were fascinated with Arthur, with what happened to Arthur. They were so fascinated as to describe the type of tree from which he was hanged. But Elvira is never mentioned. Not one time is Elvira mentioned. And I, with help from some great folks I actually hired two professional genealogists to help me, trying to find Elvira in Ancestry or Family Search or any of these services. No luck. We were not able to find her anywhere. We searched the records in Hagerstown, which is the county seat for Washington County, Maryland. We searched dozens and dozens of old newspaper accounts. There's no mention of Elvira. And I had to conclude that she was the victim of what today we would call an honor killing. Her family decided that either they or someone they instructed was going to kill her. And they were not about to bring that mixed-race baby back home to the farm in Fauquier. She goes completely unmentioned and disappears. I was able to trace all the members of her family, her brothers, their wives, their children. Her parents, I was able to trace them from that moment in 1880 through all of their deaths, their selling of the family farm and moving to Loudoun County. And yet I found only one reference to her. And that reference was Nathan's will, her father's will, filed in the Fauquier County Circuit Court in 1890. So we see the will surfaces 10 years after the incident.
Yeah.
And in that will, he distributes his property. He has a wonderful 300-acre farm in Fauquier, beautiful, and a nice house there. And he distributes his property among his sons and his widow. And it struck me when I read the will that the attorney who helped him prepare it's obviously prepared by an attorney, it's very formal language, says, well, what about Elvira? And so paragraph 4, almost as an afterthought, addresses Elvira, in which he says, I'm not forgetting my daughter Elvira, who died in Maryland. I bequeath to her and any issue that may have survived, meaning any children that may have survived, her child that she was pregnant with. I wondered about that child.
Right.
I bequeath to her one penny. It was, in my opinion, it was a hostile token that he wanted to make sure that both he and his heirs were protected from anybody who would come up later and say that I'm due some portion of this estate. 10 years had elapsed.
Yeah.
And he had neither forgiven or forgotten what she had done. And he was not going to bequeath her or her child anything.
Wow. What a story.
That is the end of my story, Ted.
Jim Hall, that is some story. And I guess in just the fact that he says in the will, she died in Maryland.
Yes.
And I think that kind of backs up with, you know, kind of your assumption.
He does not say when she died. He does not say where or how. All it said was, it was almost like the attorney says, you got to mention her. He says, okay, I'll mention her. She died in Maryland. That's all he said.
Yeah. And just the anger to,
yes,
to go up there, to bring him back. He ends up being lynched. She ends up dying. And then 10 years later, in a will, there's still that anger.
Yeah, it's visible in the will, I thought. He could have bequeathed her. I don't know what he could have bequeathed her, but a penny?
Yeah.
That's purposeful.
Yeah. Wow. And just the times, you take a look at just kind of the vigilante justice that sort of,
yes,
still was taking place,
yes,
back in the 1880s when this happened.
And no one ever was brought to bear for the,
yeah,
what they did. There was an interesting, I found an interesting editorial in a newspaper in Pennsylvania, of all places, in which it called on the governor of Maryland to extradite those who were responsible for kidnapping. And I thought that was the only reference I saw to anything like that. It was almost like it was expected. It wasn't a surprise that these men behaved in this way.
Yeah.
Not only to go up to Maryland to cross a state line and kidnap two adults, but also to bring one of those adults back and put him in jail, and then to storm the jail four nights later,
yeah,
remove him against the wishes of the jailer, and drag him five blocks away and hang him. That's okay. Nobody ever says a word about it.
Yeah, there's no justice there.
None.
Well, and you look at this and you think in what happened in this case, and you tie it to the Lovings in Virginia, and again, that was real. You know, that was a real recent story. This,
yes,
there was interracial marriages there was a lot of anger over that.
Till 1967, I think there were 16 states that banned interracial marriages when the Supreme Court decision came out.
So, 1967. I remember going to being in Caroline when they put a state marker up, and, yes, and just to see the family, and to see, again, all of these stories, 30s, 60s, you know, not that long ago.
No, still within the memory of, not within the lifetime of anyone still alive, but certainly,
yeah,
within the memory, within the stories told around the dinner table.
Yeah, within families. What also was interesting to me when you started telling the story, just what was known, just sort of a glimpse of Arthur Jordan.
Yeah.
And we have this idea of what slaves and what slavery was like. He doesn't fit that,
no,
that category.
No, and I think he was roundly resented for his confidence.
Yeah.
And I was struck by that. He was born in 1855, and if you end slavery at 1865, then he was a 10-year-old.
10-year-old.
He lived 10 years with his family, his mother, his father, and his brothers and sisters, under slavery. But then he was free. And from age 10 till age 25, when he died, he lived as a free man. He was in one of the censuses, 1870, he's in a boarding house. So at age, I think, 16, he's off on his own already. He's a man of the world, so to speak. He worked for a number of different farmers in Fauquier. He has had experience. He's got a wife. He's got an infant daughter. He's a different man than you might expect. And he carried himself that way. And he was an accomplished man. And they resented him for it.
Yeah.
He was out of place.
Well, and then like you mentioned, in probably just the confidence that he had, like you said, they shouldn't have been out had they laid low.
Yes.
In Western Maryland, they might have had a chance.
They might have had a chance. I think I've always been amazed at the letter writer. The letter writer was an absolute stranger to them. He saw them. He did a little investigative work to find out who they were, where they were from. He was struck by the fact that they appeared to have money. And he knew. He said that every aspect of that offended him. And he just didn't go back home and be offended. He went back home and did something.
Yep.
He sat down and he wrote letters. And he sent them off to Fauquier. And one of them, at least one of them, worked. Got to Nathan's attention.
And he didn't sit down and do that work online and, you know, Google something. That,
no.
Back then, boy, that was, he really did some, I mean, he really was a, you talk about anger with the family. He had anger. There were issues.
He saw a black man and a pregnant white woman enjoying themselves in an evening out or a Sunday celebration of the new black church. And he was determined to do something about it. There's another example of that, a prime example of, if you're right, if they had laid low, if they had lived a more private life, perhaps. Obviously, the Shupps didn't mind.
Yeah.
The Shupps had them there, I think, employing both of them, certainly Arthur.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, we talk about this, is you think about that it did offend the one person, but like you say, that there were the Shupps, there were others in the town that were fine with it. It wasn't as though there was just racism with everybody.
Right.
But you get the right people, or you get someone who's really angry.
Right.
And this is what you come up with.
And the letter found its way to the father, and the father acted on it. He gathered his neighbors. They acted on it. They didn't have to ride with him those 80 miles to.
Yeah.
They said, yes, we're with you. We can understand your offense, and we're here to help.
I guess when you try to draw parallels to condemn for love in old Virginia to the last lynching in northern Virginia, again, with the Shedrick Thompson story, again, it's the anger.
Yes.
There's when you get enough people together, there's, you know, the anger just goes unchecked.
That's why I'm old enough to have seen some remarkable changes in racial attitudes in Virginia,
yeah,
and in the nation. And it's so welcome because with these stories, I'm face to face with just intense racial hatred.
Yeah.
And now it's not good. It needs to get better, but it is. There has been change.
Yeah, you can see it. Yeah,
yes.
You can. Yeah, and that's another great thing that these books do show, that there's,
yes,
that there's. Well, again, your research skills to do this, even some of the newspaper reporting back then is that you would reference. I would think there were some pretty good, you know, on one side, you know, they didn't follow up with Elvira. But that did give you, I guess, something to go by.
I was lucky in the sense that I had no letters, diaries, personal,
yeah,
correspondence at all. And that was not unexpected, I guess. But I sure wish I could have had Elvira's diary. Wouldn't,
yeah,
that have been interesting?
Yeah.
But the one thing is that there were multiple newspapers in that area. And they recognized this as a story that would interest their readers. And so they covered it closely.
Okay.
The Alexandria Gazette, which was the daily that circulated in Fauquier at the time, had seven stories on five consecutive days. They thought this was an interesting and important story. And they covered it pretty well. I'm grateful for that, of course.
Yeah. Jim Holland this morning. History Press is where you can. History Press, Amazon, Barnes & Noble has Condemned for Love in Old Virginia, The Lynching of Arthur Jordan. Also, The Last Lynching in Northern Virginia, Seeking Truth at Rattlesnake Mountain, his other book. We'll wrap this up this morning when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Renew Health.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Jim Holland this morning. Great show. Just looking back. I mean, these are tough stories, as we've talked about, Jim. It's tough to look at your country that this all happened, but it's good to know. It kind of gives you a glimpse into a time that we can't even imagine.
Well, I'm glad we can't imagine, in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if I wish our knowledge of my knowledge was of history was better than it is, but it seems to be long forgotten, and it's a shame. I'm kind of a believer in Byron Stevenson, who has established the Lynching Museum in Montgomery, Alabama, and has done remarkable work on changing the conversation of about lynching. And his belief is that we have to acknowledge and then reconcile. Mm. And it's a sequential process. You must first recognize and acknowledge what happened, understand what happened, before you can reach any reconciliation, and before we can make the world that we want it to be.
You mentioned earlier that there's a website, Lynching in Virginia.
Yes. Gianluca DeFazio, professor at James Madison University, has just expended an enormous amount of time and energy to create a really authoritative website.
These books are tough, but if you have an interest in history, it gives you, like I say, it's a glimpse of history.
It's a little known aspect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly is known by some, but general that easily the most frequently asked question of me, or statement of an audience member after I give a talk, was person who will come up and say, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I've lived here all my life, and I had no idea.
If people want to get in touch with you or have you come and talk to them, what's the best way to do that?
My website. It's jim-hall-author.com.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a website. I think if you did Last Lynching or Condemned for Love, if you did a Google on that, it would send you to my website.
And you're working on something else in Orange County.
Yes. I realized I was happier if I had a project to work on. It is my, in a sense, it's my crossword puzzle every morning, or my Wordle. I try to do a little something about on a story, and in hopes that someday it might become a book. The first one took me 3 years of that kind of work, and the second book took me 5 years. So I'm in no big hurry. But I have decided, I've done some 4 months of reading and research on an incident that occurred in Gordonsville in Orange County, just about 30, 40 miles from us to the west, in 1936, and even later one than the Thompson case in 32. This one involved the Wales, brother and sister, elderly black residents of Gordonsville. They lived adjacent to the cemetery that's there, and they apparently resisted the town's efforts to sell them land so they can expand, the town could expand its Maplewood Cemetery. And that led to an encounter between Sheriff William Young, the sheriff of Orange County, and William and Cora Wales, the elderly brother and sister who lived in the family home. And the sheriff brought a warrant for William's arrest under, he was required to make an appearance before what was then called a lunacy commission. And that led to gunfire. And the Wales were accused of shooting and killing Sheriff Young. He dropped dead in the front yard. And that led to a mob reaction that resulted in the death of the Wales and the destruction of their home.
We will talk more about that the next time we get together. Jim Hall, thank you so much. Thank you for what you've done with this. And again, look this up. And again, the Lynching in Virginia, the website. Jim, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Jim Hall with us this morning. Thank you for listening, and we will see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.